Hey there, and welcome to the Confident Woman Podcast. I'm your host, Rachel Brooks. Join me as I sit down and chat with co-hosts, friends, and carefully curated guests and talk about all the things that empower you to become your best and most confident self. So let's get started. All right, ladies, welcome back to another episode. So today we have with us Cheryl Ann Skolnicki. And Cheryl Ann is an expert on how to ease the tension between women's ambitions and their family lives. She's taught thousands of brilliant women around the world how to re-engineer their lives so they can play big both at work and at home while protecting restorative time for themselves. So, of course, we're going to have an incredible conversation, which is kind of that ambiguous myth of, does work-life balance exist? So welcome, Cheryl Ann.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, I'm excited. I know that we were chatting before we hit record and just some of the topics that we're definitely going to dive into today. I'm super excited. But I would love for you to share a little bit more about you and the journey that led you into the works that you do today.
Sure. Well, I think like so many people who have content-based platforms where we're trying to be of service, I'm somehow trying to serve my former self. You know, the part of me that really was wrestling with how to keep all of the pieces of my life together with excellence as things got more and more complex over the years. I started my professional life like a just full-fledged overachiever, came straight in out of undergrad to Procter & Gamble and spent 15 years there just dutifully climbing the corporate ladder. And during that time, I got my MBA, I had three children, I got married, not in that order. And all of those things kind of led to, you know, at some point I like looked down at this collection of things that I'd amassed and responsibilities that I had picked up, and including the responsibilities that I had in a very significant job at work. I was running a $1 billion business that was global in our laundry category. And it was just like, it was a lot, you know, it was a 24/7 kind of hum. I made a lot of changes personally, just by sort of dissecting what wasn't working and putting things back together. And then over time, felt like that was really the work that I was most interested in doing. Rather than having someone use a particular brand of laundry detergent versus another, I thought maybe this is work that I could do on a more full-time basis. And so that was the early kind of origin story behind Brilliant Balance. And 14 years later, we're still growing.
Oh, I love that. And I love that you mentioned about being that overachiever and striving for the excellence, but you recognize that there's got to be more for you. This isn't what you're here for. And having, you know, tying into what your bio says about dissecting and re-engineering. So that was really something you saw in yourself early on and said, well, how can I do this not only for myself, but make this possible for other women and help them do the same?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think first you have to fix yourself, right? First thing is, what is not working for me? And can I get this to work for one human? And then I think for those of us who feel called into this kind of work, it's like, can I get this to work for someone else, just one other person? And if it works there, how far can this go? Is there really kind of a process that's helpful? You know, are there things that I learned or insights that I had for myself? And that was really important to me, that everything had been tested on me before I was sharing with anyone else.
Yeah. And I typically see as when we're in a place of service, we always talk about who our ideal client is, who our ideal target audience is. And it always comes back to ourselves, right? It's a former version of who we are, because we really teach from a place we haven't walked or experienced. But I love that you were like your own first guinea pig person.
Yes.
Wait a minute, I got to test this from me and it's working. Right. Oh my gosh, if it's working for me, just think of how many other lives this can affect and change. So I love the story behind it, because it's like we always have that why we do what we do. And I would love for take a moment here to tell us a little bit more about your why, like the why, because there was more than just, I don't think this is what I'm here for.
Right, right. Well, it's like, I regularly say that this generation of women, and I mean that broadly, I mean, I think we probably span a couple of labeled generations and decades of ages, but women, let's just say in their 30s, 40s, 50s today, I really think we are the generation of women who were told that we could have it all. And I mean, it was just hard-coded into us in school. We were the first ones who really started dreaming aspirationally about having bigger careers. And What I don't, I think everyone was so busy telling us that we could have it all that there wasn't a lot of thought into how you were going to have it at the same time, right? And I think maybe a more appropriate internalization would have been, you can be anything you want to be, but you're going to have to make some choices. And if not big macro choices, like, do I want this or not? You know, do I want to get married? Do I want to be a mother? Do I want to have a career? Do I want to be a leader? But also nuances around how we were going to do those things. If we did make the choices, like, yeah, I'll have one of each, please. How were we going to go about doing that so that we weren't breaking in the process? And I think, you know, the lack of forethought of that is what got us into kind of the mess we're in today as a culture, which is everybody still wants it all. And no one has really figured out how are we going to do all the things that come with this, you know, collection of goodies that we've amassed on our plates. So for me, that was the answer. It was like, I did want to have a meaningful, substantial career. I like to work. I knew I wanted to work. I wanted to be married. I wanted to have children. I have three of them. They're teenagers now. You know, I wanted to be involved in my community, and I didn't want to break in the process. And so that took a little bit more of a scalpel approach than like a broad hatchet approach of what I was going to have and not have. Does that make sense?
It does. Absolutely. And I love that you brought up that, you know, kind of the generational. It seems like we do blanket that across that. I think it's what we coin now is women's empowerment, or like, you know, the empowering women. It's like, go girl, you can have it all. And it's like, until you can't manage it all, and we start losing it all. And it's that, as you said, how do we manage this all at the same time? Because we want it all, you know, the family, the kids, the work life, the perfect life. And that's, you know, kind of pulling pieces from my book, Chasing Perfection. It was like, but what if we could have it all? Until you have it all and you realize it's not sustainable all at once.
Yeah.
And that was kind of a tipping point in my own life. So I'd love for you to kind of share a little bit more about that, because as we try to still empower women, we're also given the reality that it's not going to be in this perfect packaged ribbony box. It doesn't come in that context. So what does that look like for, as somebody who's walked that experience, how can we kind of unwrap this gift that we can give ourselves in a way that seems more manageable for where we're at today?
Yeah, well, I think what I am always trying to do with the women in our community, and you probably do similar things through your work, is help people get very, very clear about what they do want. And I'm not sure, to be perfectly honest, Rachel, that most of us spent a whole lot of time thinking about that. I think we just quickly started eating from the all-you-can-eat buffet. You know, I always use that metaphor because if you picture yourself in front of a buffet, like at a wedding or a restaurant or whatever, no one really goes through that and takes some of every single item on the buffet, right? If you do, you're probably not going to feel very good afterward. There's this first process of like taking a look at what's there and making choices about what do I want and what am I going to leave behind, right, in this particular. And then like, how much of it do I want? And, you know, then maybe you sit down with it and you're like, actually, it turns out I didn't want that. And I'm not going to finish them. So that ability to sort of have our thinking evolve and to really curate the collection of things that we want to change it over time, it just sits at the epicenter of my work. I think literally everything is a choice. And sometimes we just don't like the consequences of those choices or the trade-offs, so we don't make them, right? But I think really so much of what we want is on the other side of like learning to get better at making choices. So when we reach those inflection points where we're like, this isn't working, that's where I usually like lay it all on the table and look at like, my phrase is, let's double click on this problem that's not working. Kind of take the whole thing apart, pull apart. What were the root causes? How do we get here? And then really re-engineer like, well, how could we do this piece differently? Okay, let's say that hypothetically, the morning routine is a hot mess, right? You're trying to get kids out the door, you're leaving for work, your husband's leaving for work. It's like a big mess. And if people are like, the mornings are so crazy, it's not like you have to quit your job to re-engineer your morning, right? There's tons of things that we can do inside of the way mornings like unfold to make them feel a little better. And I'm picking like a really small but broadly relatable example. So many people struggle with mornings being, you know, we're yelling at the kids and we didn't get to work out and everybody's, you know, feeling very stressed trying to get in the car. And it's like a microcosm for the whole picture, right? Because if we can re-engineer a morning and understand like what's really driving the stressors, we can start to apply those same principles to bigger pieces of our lives, like the work life overall, or the division of labor at home, or how many responsibilities we're saying yes to at work. And often what sits right at the root of all of it is some made up rule that we decided to believe a long time ago that we haven't let go of. And that following that rule dutifully, because we think it's required of us, is the thing that is breaking us. And getting a little bit of freedom from that, rewriting some of those rules in a way that works for us, starts to give us a way forward. So like, again, it's a lather, rinse, repeat on that process, like over and over again in various areas of life until we get some freedom.
I love this. Yes. So I'm jotting down a couple of notes here that I want to bring it back to. Number one, get clear on what we do want.
Mm-hmm.
So how many of us and listeners,
yes,
we ask ourselves that question, and we might look from that inside externally out. So I always say, like, you can't compare your insides to others' outsides.
Yes, yes.
So we might see what other people are doing, like, wow, that looks like fun, and that looks amazing, and how does she do this all? She's got all these kids, and everything looks so perfect. And we're comparing our lives to what we see in social media, because typically we're probably not ever going to meet those people. We see them in real life, right?
So right.
No. And the same is true for somebody else looking at your life. It's like what you want to put out is the facade of what you're trying to show. Like, hey, look, I can do it all in this very glimpse micro moment. And that's mm-hmm. the moment we're all striving for.
So yeah.
We sustain that.
Or we're showing, like, the reality is, I don't think most of us are lying, right, on social media. It's like, these are things that I prioritize. What we're not telling is the rest of the story. What do I not do in order to do this? And so I think one of my most popular blog posts ever was like titled something, I can't remember exactly, but like things I don't do. And people are so curious about what are you saying no to in order to be able to have these things that are visible. And so I'll get you the link to that one. I'll find it. But the idea of revealing, like, these are things that I am in this season of life just not doing. Like, I famously, like, I never know what's on TV. I just don't know TV shows. I don't know anything about them. My team makes fun of me all the time because they'll be like, oh, did you see? And then they go, oh, right. You never know. It was like a long season of just saying, this is not going to fit. I cannot be up to date on a show and also do the other things that I want to do, right? I have shared openly, like, I have not spent a lot of time with girlfriends in a long season of my adult life because between my work and my immediate family and my parents who live close by, there wasn't a lot of time for like girls' night out on a Wednesday. And so other people prioritize that, which is awesome. It's just part of how I was able to do these other things was not having, you know, a volleyball team or a golf league or whatever that I was involved in. And that's not to say that those are forever decisions, but they were really important trade-offs during certain seasons to push other things forward and allow other things to come back, right? And we all have those examples. We're just not talking about the ones that we like deprioritized.
Mm-hmm. That totally makes sense because as you're sharing that, I'm thinking, oh my gosh, that's kind of like me. So I feel like we're a little bit similar in that sense because it's like, yes, we're craving for like community and that connection and girlfriends, but yet there's a trade-off because I find myself in these seasons where there's a workload that's priority and I have to, it's a trade-off, as you said. So there'll be long nights and it's like, oh, I go online and I'll see my girlfriends having fun. I'm like, oh, disappointing that I couldn't go, but yet they know what I'm working towards. And having those peers that are friends in that case would be like, well, I'm supportive of that because we know that your passion, your heart is at this season and in this time. And that's why I think, you know, with ebbs and flows of life, there's, you know, moments of seasons and times and things like that, but nothing is permanent. Nothing is forever. And I think
that's
something we do have to embrace and be like, yeah, we have to embrace the suck for a few minutes or a few hours or a few weeks, months, whatever that term is, until you're able to get ahead and achieve those goals that are meaningful and sustainable for you at that point. Because once it's kind of in motion, we're able to have that momentum going where sustainability, I think, is the long term of what we're trying to achieve, right? So keep it going instead of short term for the...
Yeah. And I think it's important probably to state the other side as well, that sometimes the priority is relationship or leisure or rest and not achievement and work. I mean, I've had seasons in my life where work had to hit a dull roar so that I could prioritize things that were happening at home or were personally important to me. And so I think that's so important too, because it's easy. It's so easy to be like, oh yeah, I don't watch TV because I'm busy working. Like, I don't want it to sound like that. I think there's times when it's, I'm not actively growing Brilliant Balance at some point in the last 14 years because I'm leaned into something that's happening in another part of my life. And so it really is constantly reevaluating, right? Giving yourself permission for your thinking and your priorities to evolve over time and knowing, like I usually say, life is long. I mean, if we're lucky, right? And so everything doesn't have to be forever. We can really move through these seasons where different things move to the front and the back.
Right. And so that kind of leads me into how do you prioritize? And the reason I ask is because, like, for me, I look at the year and I break things down into quarters. So, and I reverse engineer as well. I'm like, sure. Listen, summers. So that is not the season I go hard into my work.
Right.
Counter to that. And so I'd love for you to share a little bit how you prioritize work and life.
Yeah. And I think you, anybody who came out of a corporate background is going to work in some version of an annual and quarterly plan, right? It just feels really natural and normal to us. The thing that I've started looking for are the sort of off-season inflection points to notice when do I need to make a change. I love a good annual plan and I have one always at play. But what I really noticed, especially in this chapter of motherhood, and again, my kids are now, I mean, almost 20. My oldest is going to be 20 in a few months. So they're 19, as we're recording this, 19, 16, and 13. And in over the season of really parenting as a heavy chapter of what I was doing, like a big chunk of my time and energy and heart was involved in that, their seasons of the year drove the biggest changes to my priorities. So if we were in a heavy sports season or theater season, I noticed that that was the inflection point where I needed to make an adjustment, right? And then if that season ended and we had more time as a family in the evening, I needed to make another micro adjustment. So yes, I have an annual planning process, but I really look throughout my year and I can almost feel them coming now. Like, oh, the winds are changing, like Mary Poppins, right? Coming in with the west wind. It's like, oh, I just have a daughter who came home from college a couple of weeks ago from her first year of college. The other two finished for the summer. You know, my son has a driver's license. He's getting his first job. Like, there is a lot of change. And if I'm trying to uphold a schedule or a rhythm that was working even 3 months ago, it's not going to work right now. And so I think those natural inflection points of saying, okay, I'm going to lean into this and notice we need to make an adjustment here about the way we're thinking about family dinners or who has cars when or what are curfews like or when am I going to bed and waking up? Right. So I think the notion of sort of staying agile, like on our toes and noticing what's happening around us, because these are planned changes, Rachel, like the ones I'm describing, like these are changes that we could have seen coming. But what do you do when you get the phone call that one of your parents is in the hospital, right? Or that one of your kids was in a car accident? And then everything changes in a moment and we still have to be on our toes and able to make those adjustments. Or I think that's often what takes us under, like we're not able to make the adjustments fast enough.
Right. And I think that that's, you know, giving ourselves some of that permission to be flexible. So we have to have margins into our schedules and not keep them so rigid and tight because, yeah, when things do happen, we have to, you know, all of a sudden that thing that you don't ever want to think about becomes that first priority where now everything just gets shuffled down the calendar board. I don't know.
Yes, yes, yes. But calendar Tetris, I call it. Yeah, it just keeps moving.
Exactly. So it's like, okay, but then again, shifting and swaying as the times and the seasons come on, which gives you a lot of that. It takes a lot of that pressure, I think, off of you to produce and perform and always be perfect with that calendar and say, okay, no, nothing is going to get in that way because life gets in the way. And yes. I think, you know, for me, it was something I definitely realized as well is that when we look at the priorities, I was recognizing that everything was very externally again. So what other people needed, the demands, the wants and needs, and somewhere in there, I didn't even include myself in that priority list.
Yes.
So I'd love for you to share a little bit of your experience into self-prioritization.
Yes. This is where maybe the fact that I'm an only child helps a teensy bit. My husband would probably say the same thing. I feel like I have naturally had an ability to protect something for myself. And I'm a very direct communicator, and that serves me well in being able to assert, like, this is something that's important to me, and to kind of advocate for it. So I recognize that that is less typical of a personality trait, especially for women. I do it with a fine, you know, a velvet glove, right? It requires a level of finesse and trade-offs with the other people in my household. But I do think I recognized really early on that prioritizing my own health and well-being and the kind of collection of activities that drove me to feel, I always say, healthy, whole, and human, were going to have to be at the top of the order of things, of how I was making decisions. So sleep for me became really important, other than when I had tiny babies who weren't sleeping through the night. And exercise has been important to me my whole adult life. Food, you know, certain food habits, time alone. I really need to have some time alone every day, even if it's a very short period of time, just time where no one needs me, right? No one on my team, no one in my family, just a little bit. And that could be used to go for a walk or be in the car or go to Home Goods and wander around the aisles. But like, I have to have some kind of a just pull out to recharge. So I describe myself as an extroverted introvert. I am very social and happy to, but I really need that time alone. And so I keep that really sacred. I need reflective time, you know, to be able to just think. So my husband teases that I wander around the house with like this stack of notebooks and pencils, like as though at any moment I might be called into journalistic service. But I really do, because it allows me to just, no matter kind of where I am or what happens, to just think and jot something into, and I've done it for years. Very odd little habit. So those are some of the things that I hold central, okay? And so in various seasons, like my kids now would never get in my way about saying, I'm going to go for a walk or a run or yoga or whatever, because it's so normalized. They've seen it since they were infants. But when they were very little, that might have looked like, you know, them waking up and I'm in our home gym and they're like padding down in their little PJ'd feet. And I'm like, cool, grab a seat right here. You know, you can hang out here, but this is what's happening right now. Versus how many of us, how many women that you know would be like, okay, well, I guess I'm not working out today. You know, the baby woke up. So I think it's just that much of a razor's edge of a shift, like to be able to protect for the thing or to throw them in a stroller and take them with you. Right. So I've always really kind of gotten the memo that having some of that time in the things that keep me more regulated emotionally and feeling better physically just made all of my relationships function better. And so those are some of the things I do.
Similar? Yes, very much so. And I'm loving that your little takes on it are a little bit different. So you had healthy, human, and whole.
Yeah.
And prioritizing very much of the same things that I have. I mean, I look at it as like my 7 acts of self-care, and it sounds like, wow, 7 is kind of a lot. But I'm like, there are things that once you get into the habit of doing, they're so simple. So for me, it's exercise, nutrition. So, you know, whole, real, healthy foods. Mm-hmm. Exercise is just any sort of movement, something that feels good for you. And that's, you know, for me, it's strength training or going for a long walk, something like that. Staying hydrated. Quality of sleep. Oh, quality of sleep. Not just quick little naps in between or like the 4 hours that we think that we should blink. Self-love, gratitude, and managing stress. And so those are things that every day when I feel myself like out of alignment or something's not right, I'm like, what did I do? And I could spot the area. So now I know to make that shift for the next day or, you know, adjusting my schedule. But very much like you, you're an extrovert, introvert. I call myself a social introvert.
Okay.
I think, well, I could be the butterfly, but as soon as I get zapped, I got to go back and recharge. And it's very short circuited because I value so much of my alone time because I'm such a deep introspective individual that will self-analyze it. All this stuff about yourself. Be like, man, I know so much about myself. And these people, like, I wonder sometimes, like, don't they even wonder where they're going when they get behind the car?
Yeah.
Where to go? But I love that we're talking about this because when we can really prioritize our health and well-being, that becomes the baseline and the foundation to which we build everything upon. We can't try to build from a broken foundation while we are the one constant variable in everything that we do. So we need to protect and preserve that.
Yes. And I think this is where the conversation we were having earlier about the messaging on you can have it all, right? Sort of bumping straight into the brick wall of as long as you are a selfless caregiver. Mm-hmm. those are the messages that are on a collision course, because I value being a caregiver, right? It's an important role that I have as a parent and a wife and a daughter. And yet the word like fully selfless is, that is a recipe for martyrdom and exhaustion and burnout and really cranky pants behavior that I don't like in myself, because there, it isn't, dare I say, balanced, right, with this other very important part of me. So to me, we're always weaving, like braiding together this ambition, which is rooted not in a desire for accolades, although they're great, right? Everybody loves to get accolades. It's rooted in a desire for service. Like, I am clear in the gifts that I have that I can use in service to women who need to hear these messages. And I don't want to lay that down, right? I don't want to lay that down. So I have to create space for it. And if I'm going to have the energy to do that, it has to come from somewhere. We have to source that energy, that power to go do that work from somewhere. That's what those self-care practices are about. They're not luxuries. You know, they're not like, oh, it's so, it must be nice to go for a walk. Like, no, this is baseline foundational energy work that is like plugging yourself into the wall so that you can go do the thing that you're here to do, right? Including caring for those people that you love. So I really think that's where the collision course is so prevalent, is like, how do you have both? If we think about balance, we're usually talking about how do I do work that's not about my family? And then how do I have time and energy for my family? And you know what sits at the center of that? The way we take care of ourselves. I mean, that's like the intersectionality.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And so sometimes that whole mix of like, wow, she's got it all together, could feel like that super mom, right? Mm-hmm. I'll do it all. And, you know, you kind of just hear this because it's like you see somebody becoming so successful or living out their life and their dreams and, you know, the success and achievements and all the things that what the world will say, oh my gosh, she's got it all. But that's it. Supermom myth is that you don't always have it all and you don't always have it all together in those moments.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'd love for you to just kind of bust that myth, because I know that you were talking about it, like what works for you, but what are some of the things that you hear often from the ladies in your community as well?
I think it's just a very dangerous narrative around supermom and superwoman. I think it's a dangerous narrative because it implies that, like, here's the risk. The risk is we start to take pride in being told that, which only fuels it to go farther, right? And that's what we really want to break down quickly. And I think the other side is people like, oh no, not me. I'm such a hot mess. Look at what a hot mess I am. Well, I'm not a hot mess, right? So I'm also not going to jump into that side. I think there's this very kind of nuanced middle ground of it is not perfect and it is not a hot mess. And that is where most of us live, right? Is we have better days and worse days. We have pieces of our lives that we're really good at and we lean into and prioritize, and others that we're like not great at and don't lean into and don't prioritize. I love to cook, as an example. So people will, you know, come to my house for a meal or a snack or whatever. And then there's this whole conversation about, oh my God, I don't know how you cook like this. Well, I've loved that since I was 5 years old. You know, this is a huge passion of mine. I don't craft like at all, zero crafting. So if I look at something that someone handmade, I'm in as much awe of that as they are of having a meal at my house. I think we just all have to take our places with, like, in the collective, there are gifts that we bring or talents or interests. I don't play music. I mean, I took piano lessons for 100 years, but I don't even have a piano in my house. So that's not something I'm sitting down. And I have friends and acquaintances who make beautiful music in their homes, right, all the time. So none of us is doing every single thing. It's like, but just honoring and acknowledging, like, yeah, we're allowed to be really great at some things and also have others that we're taking a pass on because they're not for us. But like, I get so hung up on the ends of the spectrum. It's like, she's perfect or she's a mess. No, I think most people are living somewhere in that messy middle.
Yes, I agree. I agree. And I think that for me, I mean, some of the hard lessons that I learned from realizing that, you know, it's like you go into this, like, I know that perfection doesn't exist, but I didn't realize the pursuit of trying to have it all at once, and realize that for me, it was like, I never even felt that I was enough, because it's like, how do I get to that place, right?
Right.
It's just like, wow, how did I get here? But to your point, it's like you recognize your, what I call them, tags. So you have your talents, abilities, gifts, and skills. So what is unique to you might be admirable to somebody else because it might be something that they are trying to pick up as a
hobby
or something of an interest And so to your point about cooking this phenomenal meal, it could be something like that might be on your vision board per se. I know it's probably not the right word, but might be like, I would love to cook home meals for my family because I see other moms do it. Mm-hmm. When they go to your house and they're realizing, gosh, she cooks these incredible meals and she seems all put together, because it's just a mirror reflection of something that you aspire mm-hmm. and might start working on, but that might not be your zone of genius. That's
right.
You don't have competency per se if you're getting better at it. But then recognizing it, she might be the person who knits these incredible blankets. They're like, how does she do that? So to your point, it's a trade-off when we recognize that there's a want in ourselves that we see in others, but it doesn't mean that that is for you. It could just be some area of interest or a passion, but it doesn't have to be refined because that's not your skill set that's unique.
It's like the edge between envy and admiration. Like, I think envy is not a terrible thing to me. I think to kind of where you're going, envy can be a prompt. Like, this is something I would like more of, or I would like to learn from this person and emulate that. And I think that's beautiful, right? When we see something in someone else that we want, if we can translate that into like, yeah, this is a growth edge for me. I'd like to be more like that. But sometimes it's just admiration and we don't have to do anything differently. We don't have to try to keep up and win in that category too. We can just be like, wow, she is a kick-ass tennis player. That's awesome. I don't play tennis. But I'm amazing watching her do this. Or she's, you know, again, a musician, a gardener, whatever the things are that we all had to make those trade-offs professionally. You know, I am not an attorney and a doctor and a ballet dancer and a, like, we had to make choices about where were we going to put our professional efforts. And that's so too with all of these kind of interests. But again, this got lost in translation where we were supposed to be in every club in high school. And it's like, we haven't figured out how to let go of that as adults.
Yes, that achieving, the mm-hmm. achievement aspect of it. Yes. And I think that goes back to our original point of like, you know, striving for excellence or the overachiever because we want this quote unquote have it all. Mm-hmm. But yet once we get it all, we don't know how to manage it. And that's where we start to kind of unravel and go into burnout. So I'd love for us to kind of, you know, talk about burnout here, because I think, I mean, this is just for me personally, I've been there too many times, too many. And the first time was a rough go at it. And then the second time around, it's like, I saw it coming before. That's when I was like, okay, I recognize this again. And so, you know, you start to see some of the patterns and you learn from the first time. Second time, you're like, okay, there it is. And third time, you're just like, hopefully it doesn't happen again. So I'd love for you to share a little bit more about how to avoid burnout and being more brilliant in the preventative aspect of it. And the recovery if we're there.
Yeah. I like to catch people before burnout. If I'm going to work with them, I think it's helpful when we can catch them. Maybe they know they're on a road to it, but not truly at that, you know, wit's end. It's such a buzzword today, isn't it? I mean, burnout is just everywhere. I really think if you ask me just straight from the gut, what do I think is the cause of burnout? I think it's an inability to make choices. Full stop. I think when we get comfortable making choices and assessing the trade-offs and accepting that there will be some, we can avoid burnout, right? Burnout is like where we've handed over the keys to our life to someone else. And we think, well, I have to do it because they said I have to do it. And sometimes the they is pretty blurry, you know, like who is even they? But they said I have to do this. My boss, my family, my parents, this, you know, narrative I picked up somewhere, these expectations that we're carting around about how we have to do things. And I ask a lot of what if questions of new clients, you know, because they'll often come in saying, I just don't have a choice. Like, it is what it is. This is what my life is like. Okay, what would happen if you made a different choice in this area? And when you start to unravel that, it's like you just pull a thread and the whole thing just like a whole new way of looking at it. But we're so afraid to ask those questions that we don't. It's like we're running away from ever having to confront those questions. So we're not making choices. We just keep adding to the buffet, right? And just like we're walking around with these overstuffed plates thinking we can't take anything off. And it's just not true. It's just not. So I think if we really want to boil it down to like the essence, avoiding burnout is about getting better at making choices.
I agree. And, you know, falling from my own personal experiences, I think that was the choices I made at to a point where I thought that I could take on more. And so mm-hmm. I realized that I had just reached my capacity. And when I reached that capacity, I look back and it's like, oh, I bit off more than I could chew. And now I'm reaping the repercussions of like, oh my gosh, how am I going to reel myself back in? And then sometimes just a matter of dropping the whole plate and just walking away.
Yeah. You're saying, I'm just not going to do that anymore. Like, so that could be quitting a job. It could be changing an assignment. It can be dropping a side business. It can be getting off of a board, quitting a volunteer commitment. Like, there's a thousand things that could be done that start to create that mobility, that little bit of freedom where we catch our breath, we come up for air, right? And then we can like get started again. But that the pattern will repeat itself until we learn why. So I think the first part is like, we got to make some of the hard choices, accept the trade-offs that come with them. And then before we go repeat the whole mess again, like get some help to figure out what is the pattern that's at play here. So it's just easier for someone with external eyes to see it.
Exactly. And, you know, being on both sides of that, I'm able to now recognize it's like when I would say yes to certain things, even though that I knew that I can manage it at that time, it's just that time kind of seeped into longer periods of time. And I said, oh, I wasn't expecting to go, you know, if it's something, okay, yes, to this for 3 months. Next thing you know, at month six, I'm like, I'm at my capacity. Like, I just can't. And so, you know, sometimes we're afraid to let other people down. And I think that at this point, and I'm pulling this from past experiences as well, is that I'd rather let other people down than to disappoint myself and burn myself out. So it's a trade-off again. So those choices, where if you can have those conversations, say, hey, listen, I know that we went in at this, you know, for 3 months stint, we're now approaching six. To be honest, I've reached capacity and I'm going to have to pull out. And so it's just about having sometimes those hard, honest conversations, one, with yourself, and then you can verbalize and vocalize that to the other people just as a way to like not feel like you have to, you know, hurt them or burn that bridge per se. But yeah, it was just definitely a place of, and I find myself now in when conversations come up or opportunities come up, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, I can't. I've reached my capacity. And then I'm like, oh my God, look, you learned. Like capacity is such a word in my own buzzword vocabulary. And I think that that's a really great point because we all have a tipping point. And the more that we carry, we know that we just can't carry that load for so long.
Mm-hmm. And we will never solve the systemic challenges, the systemic factors that are affecting this whole ecosystem. Like we've been talking about the individual, which I'm passionate about. I work with individuals. I don't work on systemic change. I've chosen to work on individual change. But we won't impact the systemic changes if we're not brave enough as the individuals. Because think about what happens when enough people say, I cannot do this volunteer work on top of my job, on top of my family, like something will have to shift. That work will become paid work. Like, or I cannot do this many responsibilities at work. That company will have to hire more people. So it's like we can't put the pressure against the systems unless we're willing to be honest. Because the systems won't change if everyone is lying about their ability to handle it, right? So that there's just bravery that's required here to get us to the place where the systemic changes will fall in line.
Right. And so, you know, kind of to pull this all together with the burnout, what are some of your tips to lighten that the load per se? You know, we have expectations, we're carrying so much. Again, work-life balance. What are the biggest things that you would tell your clients? Or just women out there say, hey, listen, yep. I need help.
I think it's really always helpful to start in the micro instead of the macro. So I love the unit of time of a week. And this is an exercise anyone listening can do. If you just look at your calendar for the week ahead, start with today, look 7 days out or 10 days out. And I call this the SOS model. So just run this SOS. The first is, what am I going to stop doing? I'm just going to say no to it. I'm literally taking it off the list. I'm not asking anyone else to do it. I'm not going to do it in half the time. It's just deleted. Okay. It's not happening. Second thing would be, what can I offload to someone else? And there's two ways to do that. I could delegate it, which means I don't have to pay for it. It's going to a resource I already have. Could be your kid, could be your spouse, could be somebody at work who's on your team, or I can outsource it and then I'm going to pay someone to do it. Okay, so you can look at the things that are on your list and go, am I uniquely qualified to do this? Or could someone else do this? Maybe with direction, maybe with support. Okay, maybe I have to pay them, but like, is there stuff here that someone else could handle? And the third is simplify. Are there things that as I have scoped them, probably these are going to be lurking more on your to-do list than on your calendar? are there things that, you know, I'm giving myself or I'm betting this is going to take 3 hours or 5 hours or 10 hours or 100 hours? Could I simplify the way I do this? Is there a technology solution? Is there a way to batch it? Is there a way to kind of 80-20 it? Like thinking of what ways that that particular task can be done in less time or with less effort. So that model, SOS, you can run in the macro on your whole life, but it's easy to start with just like a day or a week and say, how am I going to clear some space? And that is the path out of burnout. I mean, it's you. That's how you turn the ship in the other direction and start moving away from burnout instead of toward it, is I have to have more margin, right? More white space around the activity so that when something goes wrong, there's room for the dominoes to fall. And also, I've got to be able to breathe and regroup and have some transition time and not just be like running like a robot from task to task throughout the day. So this SOS model is very powerful. And again, it's a great starting point in the micro.
These are all great tips. I'm jotting a few of these down, too. I definitely want to include these in our show notes as well. And, you know, to your point about having those margins, because we can't be so rigid and on all the time, that we do have to have those buffers and a lot for us to be able to recoup and transition, as you said, or when things, you know, weren't planned, the unexpected happens. That's life. I mean,
that's right.
So, yeah, go ahead.
I just think that's what causes us to be like that tight-chested feeling, that the fearful, like the anxiety, is knowing that there's no margin. So you just said it so well, because what I'm giving you is a pathway to create margin. And what margin does is it gives you ease. It says, you know what? I'm not going to die if something unexpected happens. I'll figure out where to put it. I'll shuffle this stuff, or I'll just reapply this model with a tighter squeeze, right? I'll take another thing off the list. I'll offload another thing that I didn't do in round one. So it's just like it works in layers. And I think you said it really well. It's like that margin is what gives us like the confidence that we will be able to handle it. Future us will handle whatever comes along.
Right, right. And I think, you know, what's the saying where it's like we mismanage the time, or of course I'm butchering this quote, but what we think that we can get done in a day. Do you know where I'm going with this?
I do. Well, there's two quotes. Right, there's the work expands to fill the time allotted, which is really a huge part of the simplify. And then also like we underestimate what we can do, or overestimate what we can do in a day and underestimate what we can do in a year or something like that.
Yeah, exactly that. And I think that, you know, as we try to go at our schedules, maybe we front load them during the week. Say we sit down like Sunday or night or something like that to prepare for the week. And we think, oh, my gosh, look at all this extra time we're going to have, you know, Thursday and Friday. And we're going to enjoy this long weekend. It's like you come Friday and you're like still on the project day that I'm on. So, yeah. And I think that that's so true, because sometimes we get so ambitious and think that we can tackle it, but we really don't know how much effort and time and energy it's going to take.
That's right.
Once we get into it. And then, of course, you know, again, adjusting as needed for our schedules, because we realize it's not just a task. Sometimes it's a project at hand where there's all these micro tasks that add up to that macro project. So I love how you put that together. Of course, like I said, I was butchering it, but you got it. You got it. So I'd love for you to just share with our listeners how they can learn more about you and just get more involved with some of the works that you do.
Sure. So I think the best place to go is to our website. It's brilliant-balance.com. There is a page where I have a podcast as well. And I think sometimes when people meet me through a podcast, it's just fun to kind of go through the archives of my show. So if you go to that website /playlist, we've curated a playlist there of some of our top episodes. It's kind of a great starting point to the kinds of stuff I teach. And then you can bounce around the site and take a look at the programs that I have. I have a core 12-month program for women leaders, that both entrepreneurs and women who work inside of companies. And then a lot of free content that's available on the site as well.
Awesome. So, of course, all that will be in the show notes below. And what is your favorite place to hang out so people can DM you if they hear the show and they're like, oh, my gosh.
Instagram these days. So I'm at CSchoolNikki on Instagram.
Awesome. Awesome. So everything will be in the show notes below. So be sure to give Cheryl Ann a follow if this resonates with you. Let her know, shoot her a message, but check out her playlist and all the stuff that she has going on. Because really, I mean, we come from a place of service. So we want you to become your best, most confident self. And so how we do that is just putting out the content and helping you with every step of the way. So thank you, Cheryl Ann. This has just been incredible. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Hey there. Thank you so much for joining me on today's episode of the Confident Woman Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode as much as I did, please be sure to like, subscribe, and leave us a review. Thanks again for listening.